Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 11th of Tammuz. Today's response will be from Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer is probably better known from the first part, Orech Chaim, Siman 29, Chavtet. And it's about the question of owning seats in shul and how far that goes. In the following sense, the man asking the question, he's writing on behalf of a shul that had been destroyed. And in the rebuilding, they're now going to widen it. And that would mean, therefore, that instead of there being 9 places on the Mizrach wall near the Aron Kodesh, so just to pause and make sure that we understand this, in the 19th century, in old-time shuls, the ownership of seats on the Mizrach wall, the being able to be one of those people who sits on that wall, along the wall with the Aron Kodesh, so today it would be similar to, let's say, what are commonly, let's say, the rabbi's seat and the president's seat up on a bima, up on a stage. In those days, you had a wall along the east side of the shul. The Aron was in the middle, and you had seats on either side. So in the old shul, they only had room for 6 such seats, and now they're going to have room for 9 seats. Now, the people who used to have those 6 seats claim that they should get the 6 middle seats, meaning they used to have 3 seats on either side of the Aron Kodesh. They still wanted the same 3 seats on either side of the Aron Kodesh, whereas the other people claim that it's not really true because those seats were known by certain names. So let's say one of the seats was known as the corner seat, or the right side, the right end seat, the left end seat, and that by those names, when they rebuild it, there should be the seat right next to the Aron and then the seat on the corner, and the middle seats in the new seats should be available for purchase for other people to take as their seats. And the reason why this is important is that those seats are going to be sold and there's going to be money raised on the basis of it, and people want the better seats if they have a shot at it. So if until now those seats have been owned by certain people, and so other people can get into it, they want now to be able to get in, they want to be able to get into the better seats. So there's an argument about which seats belong to whom in the new rebuilt shul. Now, relevant background here is that the Shulchan Aruch and Orech Chaim, Kuf Nun, 150, paragraph 5a, rules that when you open a doorway in a shul, like an entrance or an exit, it's supposed to be the opposite side of the Aron Kodesh. So if the daven towards the west, which really they shouldn't, because they should ideally daven to the east if they're east of Eretz Yisrael, they daven facing east, then the doorway should be in the west, so that when you walk in, you're immediately facing the Aron Kodesh, facing the Ark. So the Magen Avraham there says that he thinks, this is why it's going to be relevant to us, he thinks if the doorway, in the Magen Avraham's case, the doorway is on the side, let's say, and then the building burned down, the shul was destroyed somehow. I made up the burned down part, it was destroyed somehow. And then they want to build it again, and this time they want to make the door where it should be, as the Shulchan Aruch just said, opposite the Aron Kodesh. So here's the problem. You know, what the Avraham says is, other people can't complain, even if they're the majority, and even if it means that they're changing the seating arrangement. Right, so it's unclear what that means, whether it means the people who had seats where the new door is going to go and they're going to be complaining, or the people who had seats where the old door was and they're going to be complaining. That's going to be part of the Chatam Sofer's discussion. But the Magen Avraham is telling us that the people who own a seat in the shul, even, it's not just that the benches they own, they don't own just the seat. And this is an important reminder that there was a time when ownership of seats was an actual meaningful halakhic category, because the questioner says that they own ki'im hakarka kanui lahem lisaf salehem. The land underneath the seat, meaning that place in the shul, is owned by them, not completely, but at least in terms of their rights to have their seat or their bench there, and it has all of the status of ownership of land. Except for the inyan of Bar Metzra, there's a debate about whether or not, if a person wants to sell his seat in the Beit Knesset, in the shul, whether or not he has to first give the opportunity to buy it to the person who's next to him. But in all other land, there is a din of metzranut, but not for movable property or for slaves, but anything attached to the land is like the land. And that would be true of places in shul. The Ramah in Choshen Mishpat, to which this is referring, says explicitly that if somebody sells his seat in shul, the family members can say to the buyer, no, You can't buy it because it really belonged to our family, and we're going to buy it. Now, there were those who disagreed, who thought there was no such issue of dina de bar mitzvah, of the right to purchase things from a seller, from a buyer, and having first rights of refusal on something that's sold. So the Ramah says, he thinks, it depends. If there really is pegam mishpacha, if there really is a reduction in the honor or it's a disgrace to the family, as in, for example, let's say there are sections of the shul, another thing to think about, where families sit there together. So there's generations, right? There's an area of the shul that's all, you know, Rothsteins. And then one Rothstein decides to sell a seat in shul. All of a sudden, in the middle of the Rothstein clan section of shul, you're going to have a Smith, right? Or a Jackson, or whatever you're going to have. So that's embarrassing, because it'll be clear that somebody in the family sold outside the family. So there, the Ramah thinks that there's a dina de bar mitzvah, that the members of the family should and would have the rights of first refusal on the seat, and therefore they could sell, say to this buyer, sorry, we're going to buy this seat from our relative who wants to sell it. He goes on, the Chassam Sofer goes on about that for a little bit, but he didn't come to any firm conclusion that he thinks fundamentally it depends on the situation. In some situations it'll make more sense to say that the family has the right, and sometimes it plays to make less sense. But the sum total is of al pashat sheyesh lo din karka. The fundamental insight that's relevant to our situation is that the seats in a shul have a status of karka, of landed property, which is a complete revolution from what we have today. And I remember once a high school teacher of mine telling me about a situation where he got to a certain shul, and it's a huge shul, and it's an afternoon, you know, weekday afternoon minhag, and there may be 20 people in the room, and he sits down somewhere, and a gabbai comes up and says, I'm sorry, that's so-and-so's seat, you have to sit somewhere else. And he showed him a place that was open and available. So at the time he told me this story, his point was how ridiculous this can get. But once you see a tshuva like this, now admittedly, by the time of the 1960s or 70s or 80s, when this man is having this experience, the notion of seats in shul had already deeply changed, significantly changed. But it's a leftover from a time when ownership of seats in shul was a matter of karka, was a matter of land ownership, and that's what the Chassam Sofer is saying. It's very clear the halachic status of such seats is as if it's a landed property, and therefore, if people purchased a piece of the shul in order to put their benches there, and now you want to open up a new opening there, meaning they bought it on the western wall of the shul, and now they were going to put the door in there because the door belongs there, because it's really what's opposite the Aron Kodesh, but it's going to get in their way, and they're the ones who, they own the benches, and they have the rights of use to the land underneath the benches as a landed property right. So in that situation, why is it that we, the shul, is allowed to simply take their land from them against their will? So then the Chassam Sofer says something in a time of eminent domain where we just understand that governments are allowed to do this. It's interesting to watch the Chassam Sofer say this as a simple and unequivocal statement. He says, "Hagatzmecha im yitzterech tzibur lebeit haKnesset hachi yicholim lotzi echad mibeito minachalato." If a shul, if a community needed a shul, let's say there was no shul built in a community and they need a shul, and the place that would be best for the shul is owned by somebody. It's a house that belongs to somebody. It's his house. Would you think that the shul could just simply kick him out of his house? And nowadays the answer is, well, maybe not a shul, but governments can do that if they have needs for it. And we have this idea called eminent domain. Chassam Sofer is completely disregarding the possibility of such a notion. He says it can't be such a thing that you could just kick him out in order to build a shul there. Even if that means that they won't ever end up having a shul because there's no place else to build it, it's not like they can go to an individual and say, too bad, we're taking your land. If that's true of the shul in general taking a house from somebody else, the Chatam Sofer says, it's similarly true in terms of people who own seats in shul. So if we're thinking about a shul that has, for the sake of the argument, its door on the northern wall, on the southern wall, I'm actually thinking of, in my mind, on the southern wall, and now they want to build it on the northern, on the western wall, where it really should be. He says it can't be that they can just go to the people whose seats are along that western wall, who are going to have to move their seats because of this situation. The shul cannot simply say to them, it's too bad for you, you must accept that this is what we're going to do now. So what you have to say, he says, is that it's helping the shul in the Magen Avraham situation when the Magen Avraham says he can't do it, is the A, that that's where it's supposed to be. There's a halacha that it's supposed to be there. So the people who originally built the shul and put the door in the wrong wall, they made a mistake. And then when they sold the places to these people, the Chatam Sofer says, it's as if they're selling land that isn't really there. Chatam Sofer is saying that the original sale of these seats to these people with these benches along this western wall was erroneous because the community didn't really own that section of the shul, of the wall, to be able to sell it because they needed to use it for a door. Now that's a hard question because if the wall, let's say, is 30 feet, let's say, the door is not going to be more than 5 feet. Even if the wall is only 15 feet, the door is still not going to be more than 5 feet. So the shul would have had to pick which 5 feet along that 15-foot wall is going to be the place for the door. And if they sold the entire thing for benches, then whoever they come to could say, well, it's not my land that was missold, it's that person's land. So it's how that would, how the Chasam Sofer figures it out, it's unclear. He seems to be saying that wherever it is that the community now chooses to place the door, that will be the place, and they can say to the people who bought those seats, this sale was done erroneously, and therefore it's as if we sold you land that didn't belong to us, and therefore we can remove you. So that's the first entryway that he has to understanding the Magen Avraham. But he notes that it's still true that Magen Avraham doesn't say that they can do it whenever they want to. Let's suppose the shul just, people got more knowledgeable and they came across the paragraph in Shulchan Aruch that says that they have to put the door on the western side, and therefore the majority of the shul says, yes, we want to follow Shulchan Aruch, and the people along that western wall are saying, well, we have seats there. Shulchan, the Chatam Sofer notes that the Magen Avraham didn't say they can just do it. The Magen Avraham had restricted the case to where the shul had been destroyed, where the wall, the opening that had previously existed, doesn't exist anymore because it all came down, and now they're rebuilding it. The Chasam Sofer deduces from that that if it had not fallen apart, you can't just take down the wall, even if you're going to fix it, if it's going to affect these other people, unless they agree. And he brings sources that suggest that that's true as well. If that's true, when the Magen Avraham says, even when they're going to fix it, he says, the Magen Avraham said, Yikov Hadin, that the halacha just forces people to accept the halacha. Chasam Sofer says, he doesn't mean about the people on the western wall, because the people on the western wall, we're talking about a situation where it's been destroyed, and therefore their situation doesn't exist anymore either. And you can say that as we're rebuilding it, we can just force them to accept the new situation, because their land area doesn't quite exist, and therefore we can do that to them. So he says, it's not them that we're talking about now, because those, as he said, don't really belong to them. They don't really belong to them because the original sale was mistaken, because that part of the shul was always supposed to be for the doorway from the outside. So therefore, he says he thinks that the issue is that the Magen Avraham, this is a huge leap, he's in putting a lot into the Magen Avraham that isn't obviously there. He thinks it's talking about the door, the seats that were on the northern wall, meaning before this shul was destroyed and needed, and therefore as part of the rebuilding is moving the door from one place to the other, you had people whose seats were near the door on that northern wall. Their seats used to be worth less money than seats on that western wall. Why did their seats used to be worth less money? Because their seats were near the doorway. And so why does that make them worth less? Because there's lots of traffic in there, and people don't generally want seats where there are constantly people coming in and out. So now that you're going to rebuild the shul and you're going to place the doorway on the western wall, and the northern wall will now be free of a door, all of a sudden those seats that existed before but that were on this northern wall are going to be more valuable. That's assumption number one, that's what the Magen Avraham was talking about, that those people can't complain that they don't want this to happen. Because since they're putting the door, in other words, Magen Avraham seems to be saying, if the shul decided, instead of putting the door on the northern wall, they're going to put it on the southern wall, which is no more correct than the northern wall, the Magen Avraham seems to think that the people on the northern wall, in the Chasam Sofer's reading, would have the right to complain. Why should they complain? They should complain because their seats are not going to go up in value. Why would you complain that your seats are going to go up in value? The Chasam Sofer assumes because they would be required to then pay the rise in value to the community. So all of a sudden, you have people who have had seats forever. And I have to say, if they've had seats along the wall, and we're saying that the seats on the wall are worth less, then it's eminently plausible to me that these are people who are not so not so wealthy, who don't have so much money, and therefore for them to have to pay an extra amount because of the fact that the shul's done construction and now their seats are worth more, that seems to be, that could easily be a financial challenge to them. So the people might say to themselves, oh, I don't want that financial challenge and I'm upset about it. I want the door to stay in the north because that's where I'm used to and that's what I can afford and that's what it is. So the Chassam Sofer is saying, nope, they can't do that, even though the change is not being made on their behalf. It's not like they said, we'd prefer a rise in value of our seats and therefore please sell us, please give us your seat, please change the wall. They said they didn't want that. Nonetheless, they have to put up with it because it's an improvement that's happening, that's appropriate to have happening, that should be happening, and it's an improvement that they have to pay for, similar to, there's another example in Halacha, where there's an improvement that's done without somebody agreeing to it, without somebody claiming they want it, and yet because it's an improvement that helps them out, they have to pay for it. That example is in Choshen Mishpat Kuf Nun Chet 158, somebody who had an open piece of property and was surrounded by other people's open pieces of property, and the other person made a fence around. So the piece of property that's in the middle has no fence, and then the other guy owns the four surrounding pieces of property, sort of to make a square. So he puts a fence up all around the inside of his properties, which eventually, if he makes four fences, fully encloses the inside person's property. The halach is that when the man on the outside, who owns the outside properties, does that, if you only make it around three sides of it, then you don't make the inside guy pay any of the expenses because nothing has really been happening. The churva is not yet enclosed, and therefore there's nothing going on. But if he does it the fourth way, so that the inside person's property has been completely surrounded, completely fenced in, so we say that the inside man has to pay for half of the expenses of the fencing because he has benefited from the expenses of the fencing. Now, that's a clear halacha in Shulchan Aruch, but notice what the Chassam Sofer is saying, that in a lot of situations, we can require somebody to pay for something they did not instigate, they did not necessarily want, they didn't push for, and yet by virtue of the fact that they gain financially from it, they can be required to pay for it. So in the first case, it was the person whose property was being fenced in. The person whose property was in the middle who was being fenced in. And in the second case, it was somebody whose seats in shul are being raised in value, even though the people involved wanted nothing to do with it. Chassam Sofer is saying that's what the Magen Avraham was saying. By virtue of the fact they're moving the door from the north side to the west side, which is the proper side, and the shul has been destroyed, so it has to be rebuilt anyway, the people on that northern side cannot complain about the rise in value, and they will have to pay the community for the extra in the value that they get. Another example of that comes up in Bava Batra on Daf Chuf Chav Bet Amin Aleph, where the Gemara talks about the land of Israel being divided up according to value. And then it says, when it talks about value, one of the elements of value is krova or rechoka, whether it's near or far. So the Rashbam, in terms of near or far, says whether it's near or far from Yerushalayim, meaning the properties that are the places in Eretz Israel that are nearer to Yerushalayim are going to be worth more because they're close to Yerushalayim, and the ones that are further are going to be worth less in terms of that issue. So the Chassam Sofer says that language of the Rashbam is kind of strange because when the land of Israel was set up, nobody knew that the Beit HaMikdash would be built in Yerushalayim, that Har Moriah was there, that all of that wasn't there until it was revealed that it was there in the times of David HaMelech as the tradition. As the Ramban says in Parashat Korach, when Moshe Rabbeinu is telling people to separate themselves from Korach and people like that, the Ramban says, "Vizo derech mevakshei rachamim sheikalu achet me'alam, reinu to al yachid agoreim." They caused the sin to be attributed to the person who caused the sin, not to the whole nation. So an example of that is David HaMelech says that when he took the census of the people, and there in Navi, in Shmuel Ben, Perek Avdala, David takes a census, and then the people are going to get punished for taking the census, and then David says, no, it's me, I'm the one that should be punished, not them. The Ramban says one of the things that he's getting punished for wasn't just the census, but also the fact that no Beit HaMikdash had been built yet, that the Aron Kodesh was going from tent to tent, and the Shvatim, the nation, didn't care to say, oh, we have to build a bayit for Hashem, we have to build a Beit HaMikdash. And if they had wanted to build it, then it could have been done in the times of the Shoftim, but nobody cared about it so much, or even in the time of David, although David does suggest building it and is told not to, but if the Ramban says, if all the tribes had worked hard on it, then maybe Hashem would have said okay. But only David eventually figured it out, but not the rest of the people. In any case, coming back to, so that shows that nobody knew exactly where it was until David came along and said where it was, and they hadn't figured it out. But prior to that, where had the Aron been? The Aron had been in Shiloh. So when they gave out the land of Israel, what would be the most valuable properties in Israel? Would be the properties that were close to Shiloh. So that's now the Chasam Sofer comes back and says that's the right. When they gave out the land, they would judge it according to what was closer or farther from Shiloh. And then after 40 years, when they built the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, Chasam Sofer says, all of a sudden there was a huge flip in the property values of the land of Israel. So just by the way, leaving aside our question about the seats in Shul, Chasam Sofer just made another, is about to make another really surprising claim, that when you moved into Israel, when the tribes took their places, the really valuable places were near Shiloh, which would mean that the tribe of Yehuda got a big part of Israel, but it wasn't like the best part of Israel because it was not as near to Shiloh as other places. And then when David and Melech came along and with Shmuel realized and decided that Yerushalayim was going to be the place that was going to be the for the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and Yerushalayim was going to be the place that was the permanent nachala, the permanent heritage of the Mishkan and of the place of the Shekhinah, that's a huge change in property values. That has a financial effect on the land of Israel, which is something to think about in lots of other contexts as to what it is that does or doesn't make things more valuable in life and how that switches things. Chatam Sofer here says that each of the tribes would have to give money to the other tribes, meaning the people close to the Yerushalayim would now have to pay for their suddenly much more valuable Eretz share of the land of Israel, and then the other ones would get the money. So that's what the Chasam Sofer is claiming. In other words, when events happen that create a change of values in terms of property and landed property, because those are saying the people who all of a sudden had a windfall, they have to pay for it, which is not the way the world works today, but would be a fascinating thing to think about. So, you know, not if you, let's say, found oil somewhere, so that doesn't happen. That happens by accident. That happens on its own. That happens without anybody deciding it. But let's suppose all of a sudden the government in Washington decided that, you know, they were going to do something that would make X land much more valuable. The Chasam Sofer is saying that what really should happen is the people who are on that land should all of a sudden have to pay money, not to the government, pay money to the people whose land is all of a sudden much less valuable in order for, to make up for the windfall they've just gotten, which is, I think, a really interesting idea. So then when it comes back to our shul case, sticking with Yerushalayim case, sorry, for one more second, Gemara and Sota has a debate about the reward one gets for going, walking to Shul or walking to the Beit HaMikdash. So Rav says that the closer you are to Shul, the better, because there's a pasuk that says, Baruch Atah Ba'ir, that you're more blessed by virtue of being in the city. But Rav Yochanan says, no, because there's the farther you walk, the more scar you get. So maybe that's even better. So in Yerushalayim, you can't say that's true enough in terms of the farther person that's paying more. I mean, you wouldn't say the people were close to Shiloh and therefore had only had a few steps to go, and now all of a sudden they get the great benefit of getting the reward for walking to Yerushalayim. Nobody's going to claim that we would require them to pay, but maybe you would have said that even the people close now don't have to pay because they consider the people, well, you're being far gives you skar psiot, the reward for taking steps. So the Chasam Sofer says, no, it's not the question of the number of steps or the distance and close to specific. It's the kavod hamakom. It's the honor given to the place. The honor given to a place like Yerushalayim and the people around Yerushalayim, it's not a function really that they do or don't have to walk. It's their closeness sort of improves for them. It sort of hangs out over them, it oozes onto them, it expands out to them. So that honor is what's going to be going on there. So to an shul, then, it's the honor of a place that's going to be important and going to be relevant to these situations, and that's what we are going to force people or require people to pay for or not to pay for. There was a tshuva of the Rush, which the truth is that Chasam Sofer eventually says that the Rush isn't so clear, and he thinks there's a version problem, that the manuscripts got messed up and there's some words that have to be changed and fixed. But fundamentally, his understanding of the tshuva of the Rush is in the following situation. Let's say two people buy a place in shul together. So they buy one bench and they're going to share this bench in shul. And now one of them wants to do something to his place on the bench that is going to affect the other one, and is going to, well, so the question is how much going to affect the other one. Let's say, for example, one of them is going to want to make a wall, a divider, and he's going to make the divider in his section of the bench. So he's not taking away any room from the other person, and it doesn't in any way hurt the other person's seat, but by virtue of this wall, of this divider, it will turn that person's seat into a more valuable seat. It'll make it a more honored place to sit, and it makes the other person's place less honored. The Rush says that the other person can't complain. He can't complain for two reasons. First, it doesn't directly affect him, and secondly, because there's no monetary loss to the other person. It's just a level of honor. The truth is, I think honor often translates to monetary loss, but he says there's no way to stop it. But if there's a hefsei damim b'mekom shel Shimon, if it really will cost a monetary loss, meaning the value of Shimon's seat will go down. It's not just that Reuven's will go up in value. The value of Shimon's seat will go down. Then when they took the place, Bishutfut, they took it together, and it was equal to each other. So now when Reuven's place is going up, say, because himself, the Rush seems to say that the second person, the Shimon guy, can complain. Achif Isobit. I mean, he can say, no, he has to pay me for this rise in value. He's getting out of our seats together because we had bought it together and they were supposed to be equal to each other. And he thinks, even if it's just a question of the cover of the place, but it still affects the shutfut, the partnership. So for example, let's suppose there was a board at the head of the bench, and that board is now because he's going to turn it into, and that board is what everybody uses for their things. Reuven is now going to use that and take away that board and do something else with it, and that's how he's going to do it. So he's taking something that was accounted to the partnership, so then he certainly would have to pay. In any case, what Chasam Sofer is getting out of all this is that it's an example of that when partners affect things, even if what they do is purely for themselves, if it can affect the partnership, they might have to reimburse the other members of the partnership. So now, coming back to our situation, according to the question, it seems like the new shul is being built in the exact same place as the old shul. That's going to be relevant because in the old shul, the people who had the various seats own not only the seats, but they own the land under those seats. And therefore, because of that, the Chatam Sofer thinks that the fact that the name has changed, right, it's no longer the corner seat, now it's the middle seat, he doesn't think that matters because it's the seat that was over that piece of land that was their seat, and therefore he thinks that's what they get, and that's what they get. But if the place has changed, they're not building it in the new place exactly, and then they're going to rebuild it, so then the names of it would have an effect. Even so, he thinks there's still some room, because let's say we agree that they are on the corner seat. We've changed the places, so now they used to have six seats. And there used to be the seat that was on the left end, the seat that was right next to the Aron Kodesh, and it's the middle ones that are going to be the new ones. Chasam Sofer says maybe not totally, because it's still true that the corner seat now is going to be farther from the Chazan than it used to be, and that will affect the acoustics of it, and that will affect the ability to hear, and those things also are relevant to the seat, so therefore you're going to have to figure out what all this is happening. Therefore, he thinks that pretty much you have to give the old people the seat that they were used to, meaning counting from the Aron out, even though what used to be a corner seat will now be a middle seat, and it'll be the expansion seats that will be available for sale to the new people. So, Chasam Sofer has given us several different interesting ideas to pay attention to. One is the whole idea of ownership of seats and shuls, that ownership of a seat and shul is really seen as a land acquisition, a matter of land acquisition. They own the seat itself, and aside from the seat itself, they also own the right of use of the underlying land, which means that if a shul gets destroyed and they're rebuilding the shul, and they rebuild it on the exact same place, that underlying land, the land underneath that, is now is still belongs to the people that originally those seats. So whatever seats are built on that exact land would go to the people who used to own those exact seats. But if not, not. But if not, not. And then there would be room to discuss who can or cannot, who does or does not own, have the rights to those seats. There's also questions of, if I used to own a seat and it had certain, you know, hearing lines, lines of audibility from another person, from the chazan, then I can claim, if they're trying to move me to a different place, I can say that's not the seat that I had. It's also true that Chazan Sofer believe that if, for whatever, for important reasons, but for valid halachic reasons, seats have been raised in value by virtue of changes in the construction, that we can require the people whose seats all of a sudden went up in value to have to pay for that rise in value and reimburse the people whose seats have now gone down in value in exactly those ways. So a lot of interesting financial considerations stemming from landed property. One example of landed property being seats in shul, and that is a responsible day for the 11th of Tammuz. It was actually the 11th of Tammuz from Tov Kuf Tzadi Zayin from 1837. Have a great day.